I'm thinking for the Jews, when they used to tell me 6 million, I said, pity it's not 16 million. If it was 16 million, it would be your question would be solved already long ago. That's all my answer was. Whatever it is, the time went on. And then I came back to India. When did I come back? I came back in 57. In the meantime, I went to Germany. And I had quite a long history in Germany. I went back to Germany through Sweden. I had to live in England somehow. I came back to England from Iceland, I had to live. I got a job in the dancing company of Ram Gopal as a dresser. I had to take care of the costumes of the girls and all that. It was not badly paid, £5 a week in England, £10 a week abroad. I was taken to France, I was taken to Norway, I was taken to Sweden. We stayed 2.5 months in Sweden. And that took me to June of 48. Of course, I didn't like the surroundings very much. And I don't mean the surroundings in Sweden, but the surroundings in the company. The stage manager, Mr. Bentoff, was a Jew. A Jew that said in the train, he'd like to see the larders full and the arsenals empty in Germany, naturally. And I hated him for that. And the impresario was another Jew, Mr. Braunschweig, a little man, fat, with tiny little legs, very small bones, and he not, it looked like two threads, and the fat body on that. He was very ugly. Anyhow, even if he had not been ugly, he was a damn Jew. And from Sweden, I'm in Sweden, first of all, on the 6th of June. I met somebody extraordinary. I met Sven Helin. I wanted to meet him. I knew he was one of us, our people. But they told me Sven Helin meets nobody after 45. He doesn't want to meet anybody. You can try. So I wrote a letter to him. I said, yes, you can come on Sunday. You can come at 2 o'clock. I came there at 2 o'clock. And I told him, I said, you see, we are going to Germany on the 14th. I've been spending 2 or 3 nights, up all night, writing papers. I intend to spend all my salary in Sweden, buying chocolate, sardines, butter, cigarettes, putting a paper in each thing, each box, and throwing them from the windows of the Nord Express. We're going to pass through Germany. And I'd like to know, can we have any hope? He said, why do you say, can we have any hope? Do you have no hope? I said, well, I'm doing this just as an act of defiance. But what to do? Those of Nuremberg, we have killed them. So I didn't tell me, don't fear, Germany has more such men. I said, yes, but when will they appear? They'll appear in time. And I said to him, what about the Führer? Is he dead or alive? He said, whether he's dead or alive, he's eternal. What does it matter to you? I said, I'll never see him if he's not alive. Well, even if you do see him, what difference will it make? The war is lost anyhow. And his ideas are true anyhow, even with a lost war. I said, you're right. You're right. And with this talk, and with the encouragement he gave me, he said, you can distribute your papers if you like, all through Germany, if you get into trouble. I said, I don't care. I don't care if I end my life in an Allied concentration camp. In that case, distribute them, carry on. I felt my wings, my old wings, were growing again. And when I went back, he wanted to keep me at supper, if you please. I never expected it. He said, it's 7 o'clock now. You can have supper with me. I said, at 7 o'clock, I must be at the theater. It's a night show. I have to be there, it's my job. He said, all right. So I went. First person I meet in the theater is Bentoff. He said, Mrs. Mukherjee, what happened to you? I said, nothing happened to me. You look 20 years younger. I said, do I? I said, I met a great man. What kind of great man? I said, Sven Helin, the great explorer of Central Asia, the one who found out the real way the Lop Nor and other Central Asian lakes they go around and around and around and follow the same route. I said, for that, you are so pleased to meet that man. I said, yes, I am. I'm interested in archaeology and in exploration. What can you expect? He didn't believe me, of course. He found it queer. We wouldn't find it queer for long. We went through Germany, went back through Germany in the night of the 14th. 15th, we were in Flensburg. And 15th at night, when we left Flensburg, we went through Sweden and Denmark. I saw the Baltic Sea in the sunshine in the morning. I said, it's perhaps the last time I'm seeing anything beautiful like this. He said, if they put me in a camp, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter a bit. And at Flensburg, I started doing what I wanted to do, what I described or tried to describe in Gold in the Furnace. I stood at the window, the corridor of the Nord Express. I refused to eat anything, refused to drink anything, as long as we would be on German territory. I knew the Germans of those days were starving. I said, I'd be like them. Neither sleep, nor eat, nor drink. I was standing there and putting out my leaflets. This is the packets, packets of cigars, packets of cigarettes, packets of this, packets of that. The road was along the railway. I could distribute as many as I liked. I saw a young couple pick up a packet of cigarettes. They said, cigarettes? They said, cigarettes? All right, they picked it up. I thought to myself, they're going to open it and they find my leaflet inside. Good. And it went on like that. All night. In the night, in the middle of the night, at Duisburg. I'll never forget this. I had no more packets to distribute, except one packet of butter I was keeping for Arkin. I put leaflets, as many as I could, in my Icelandic cloak and threw that cloak on the platform. Some railway employee took it. Two railway employees, in fact. They came into the compartment. It was pitch dark. Everybody was sleeping. I was alone in the corridor. They asked me, they said, you speak German? I said, yes. You sent out that cloak? I said, yes. It's a good cloak, I said, it's an Icelandic cloak. Yes, they said, but there are dangerous papers in them. Did you know about these papers? I said, yes, of course I knew it. I wrote them. So you know what you're doing? I said, yes, I know what I'm doing. And why do you do it in that case? I said, I'm doing it because for the last 20 years at least, I've been revering Adolf Hitler and loving his people because they are his people. And I expected them to say, all right, you're under arrest. Come along. That was my expectation. Instead of that, one of them with tears in his eyes put out his hand to me and said, Wir danken Ihnen im Namen des ganzen Deutschlands. And I felt so moved. It's one of the greatest days or the greatest nights in my life, along with the night on the Hekla. It's equal to the night on the Hekla. I was so pleased. He said, but next time, don't throw your cloak out where there are many people. Throw it out in the station where nobody is present and the train is going on. I did that. We reached Aachen. There I gave out my last packet, some butter, and a man took it and went away on the bicycle. In the distance I saw a house. It was no longer a house, nothing but a cellar. In front of the cellar entrance there were two plates and two cats, each one eating in the plate. I said, good for you, German people. You're yourself starving and still you think about the poor cats. I blessed them. And then I thought of something else. I thought, dear me, 500 people from Flensburg to Aachen have taken leaflets of mine. They could have had a good salary or some money. They could have had milk for the children for 8 days if they had gone to the police and said, these things are falling from the windows of the Nord Express and I would be arrested. And not one of them did it. Not one of them did it. I'll deal, my furious folk. I'll come back. And I managed to come back. But how to come back? How to come back? I had no military permit, and it took 6 months to have one, and they wouldn't give one to me. England wouldn't give one to me. I tried to get a military permit and never got one. So one day, I prepared some leaflets, had them printed in England, by an Eastern European. That was, I mean to say, on our side, more or less. He put it there. And I came to Paris. And in Paris, I telephoned to Georgette Soustelle, the wife of Mr. Soustelle, the right hand of De Gaulle. She had been in school with me. She was quite astonished. "You were in Europe? I thought you were in India." I said, "Yes, I was in India, I'm in Europe now." "And what do you want?" I said, "I'd like to go to Germany." "What do you want to go to Germany for?" I said, "Just to write a book, a sort of reportage. I'm tired of writing about antiquity, I want to write a book something about it." "Can your husband give me a permit?" I said, "I can't get one from England." He said, "All right, we'll get you a permit, all right, what's wrong with that? What were you doing, by the way, during the war?" I said, "During the war, I was feeding cats in Calcutta. I always did love cats." "All right," she said, "you always were loving of cats, I know that. So you were feeding cats in Calcutta." I said, "Yes." I said, "What else do you wish me to do?" I couldn't do anything. I didn't do any resistance like you, because first of all, I was far away. I didn't do anything. "Oh, I see, good, good, good." So, in 2 days, I had my permit. The next day, I was in the train, Saarbrücken, and then Germany. I distributed my leaflets, as you know, in Gold in the Furnace, and described it all. I'm not going to describe it again, second time. But this is the way I went. Now, after that, I lived in Germany for some time. After my release, I was astonished they released me so soon. It seems they released me under the pressure, I wouldn't say the request of the Indian government. And Mr. Mukherjee put the Indian government in motion. I told him, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Because you're more useful outside than inside. That's why I did it." I said, "Good." And then I was forbidden to come back to Germany for 5 years. I came back a month later, or some months later. At once I came back. I came back, but not as Mukherjee, as Portas, my maiden name, with a Greek passport. I came back, and I started teaching. Mr. Mukherjee would send me money now and then. I had a few episodes that I described in Long Whiskers and the Tulip God Goddess. I had a cat. And when I had to leave Germany in 1957, I went back to India. Why did I go back to India? I went back to India for one sole reason. I could not publish Pilgrimage and Defiance. Defiance, yes. Defiance was published in India by Mr. Mukherjee at his expense. So was Gold in the Furnace. He published these books for me. But Pilgrimage, he could not do it. He had no more any money, no more enough sufficient money. So I went back to India to publish that and to publish also Lightning and the Sun. And I stayed there 3 years. I worked 3 years to finance these books. I financed them and we came back. I worked as a field interpreter for 3 German engineers from the East Zone. And it happened to be that they were, though they were from the East Zone, well, one was, of course, not a communist, but he was on the side of the capitalist Adenauer. The two others, especially one, was one of ours. But, of course, he couldn't say so in the East Zone, any more than in the West Zone. That's about all I could say for the period up till 1960. 1960, I came back to Europe. My mother died in 1960. I came back to Europe, but I didn't reach Europe before she was dead. She died before. And I'd got a job as a stopgap teacher in France. And with the money of that job, I started preparing to publish other books. I financed my Long Whiskers and the Tulip Goddess. I financed Impeachment of Man, which had not been published since 1945, because I had no money. I couldn't finish it then. No, that was published in 60, excuse me. That was published in 60, in India. And then I started writing years later, in the 60s. In 68, I started writing the French book that you know, Souvenirs de réflexion d'une arrière. And now I'm preparing to write some other book, also about history. That's all I can say just now. I'll take back this talking sometime later.
Thank you.
I spoke with Sustan yesterday and all that. How I got to Germany, I spoke with her. My sticking up posters and distributing leaflets in Germany, I distributed in all 11,500 leaflets or posters that were on the wall. I would have been quite left alone. Nobody would have interfered because I used to do it cleverly. Until I met a collaborator. This was in the station of Köln, Cologne, on the 13th of February, 1949. A young man, I saw a young man, very tall, former SS man. He just came out of prison he was a prisoner of war from the French. And he told me his story. He was a prisoner of war of the French. They sent him to the Congo under Negro supervision, after telling the Negroes that they, the whole lot of them, 18,000 SS men, were all enemies of the race and whatnot, and they could do what they liked to them. There was not a single Frenchman, he told me, in the camp. The head of the camp was a Negro, a French citizen, of course, but that's all. And they had a very hard time. It was a lead mine. They had watered up to their waist and hardly anything to eat, etc. 4,800 out of the 11,000 saw the coasts of Europe again. The others all died. So he told me. And that impressed me, of course. I was writing in those days, Gold in the Furnace. I had written three chapters. I gave him the three chapters and translated them to him. I translated part anyhow. And he liked it. And he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm taking the train to Hameln. I want to see some people in Hameln, and I'm coming back in a week." "All right." He said, "I'll take you to the train." So he came to the train with me. I gave him a leaflet on the way. I said, "You go to the WC and read that in the WC for nobody to see you. And tell me what you think of it." He read the leaflet, came out again. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. And very cold. He came out and put his two hands on my shoulders and said, "Who wrote that?" I said, "I." "You wrote that, but you are not a German." I said, "No, I'm an Aryan still." That being a German, I'm still an Aryan. And I owe allegiance to Germany as the country that tried to save the race from decay and from all the consequences of, well, Judeo-democratic domination. He said, "Give me as many as you like of these leaflets, as many as you can. I'll stick them for you." Leaflets, not posters, they were posters, with a great big swastika like that, 10 centimeters long and 10 centimeters wide. I gave him about 100. And out he went. And my train went, and I came back after 8 days, as I said. I came back, and he had told me, "When you come back, you go to the Catholic mission." There was a Catholic mission and a Protestant mission in every station in Germany in those days. "And you ask the address of Gerhard Wassner." That's my name. I'll find the room. Until then, I'm staying in Köln. So they'll tell you where I live and you can see me. That's exactly what I did. 8 days later, on the 20th of February, the night between the 20th and the 21st, it was about midnight, I went to the Catholic mission. I said, "Could you give me please the address of Gerhard Wassner?" As soon as I said that, a policeman that was nearby said to me, "May I see your passport?" I said, "Of course, I showed him my passport." He said, "Come along, leave your things here. Come along, we have something to talk about." I didn't like that idea. I followed him, left my things there, followed him. And he told me, "It's a business of Flugblätter, Plakaten and Flugblätter." This is posters and tracts, leaflets. So I made myself as innocent looking as I could, and I said, "What are posters and what are leaflets? I don't know what they..." "Oh," he said, "they are papers with propaganda." I said, "I don't know anything about this. What do you mean?" I did not know that Vasna was under arrest already. That I couldn't guess. So he said, look here, we are going to show you. And he put one of my posters on the table. He said, you know about that? Has Vasudev given you those? And then I understood, and then only I understood that Vasudev was under arrest. How could they find the posters? I said, yes, but you're making a mistake. Vasudev didn't give me any of those. I gave about 100 to Vasudev. I said, Vasudev is completely innocent in this affair. He probably didn't know what he was doing. He took them and put them in his pocket. I doubt whether he read them or not, I don't know. But I gave him about 100. He said, what did you intend to do? I said, I intended him to stick them up. And of course, I have no money to pay him, but I have a few pieces of jewelry. I could have given him something of my jewelry. And they said to me, who pays you? I was indignant. I said, what do you mean, who pays me? Nobody pays me. I do this because I love the National Socialist idea.
Okay.
You'll find 9 boxes that were once full of jewelry, and they are now empty. That jewelry I sold bit by bit in order to pay my journey into Germany from Saarland 6 or 7 times, in order to stay in Germany, and in order to finance also for the printing of my leaflets. He said, they were printed in Germany. I said, no, they were printed abroad. Who printed them and where? I said, I can't tell you that. He said, we have methods to make people like you speak. And I really thought, when they said that, I really thought they had the authorization to do what they liked with me. And as I had heard many horror stories of how my cameras failed in the hands of the German police after the war, I thought my turn had come. And I really was afraid. I really was afraid. I looked at my hands and I said, if they pull at my nails, what will I do? Anyhow, I prayed the heavenly powers to give me strength. And I felt really that I was getting less afraid. And I had the courage to tell them, I said, well, you can do what you like to me, but you cannot, there's one thing you cannot do, and that is to kill the idea which I represent. So you can have me, you can do what you like with me. I didn't tell them I won't speak, because I was not at all sure that I wouldn't say anything on the torture. And I thought that was the little thing that was awaiting me. But as I said these words, you can do what you like, but you cannot kill the idea that I represent. As I was saying these words, something in me told me I have been telling this to different people under different ways for the last several thousands of years. And I felt that I, my real I, was above my body. My body was something different from myself. I felt that. It was a queer experience. And now that passed away. They said to me, you are under arrest, madam. It was 2:30 in the morning. I said, I'm so glad to be under arrest. This puts me not so quite so far away from my comrades. I'm nearer to them now. I'm very happy. And then a man came. I don't know what he was, but he looked like a Jew. He said, now come along. We'll take you to the cell. And he took me into the cell. Downstairs, there must be 20 or 30 yards or meters in the underground. He opened a dark cell and pushed me in. The inside was full of mud. It was clack, clack, clack on my feet. There was one bed, but I couldn't see what was on the bed. I just banged against it, that's how I knew it was one bed. I couldn't see a thing. And he shut the door. And I banged at the door. I said, this is full of mud. Couldn't you give me at least something to sit on? I can't lie down in this, but I can sit at least. Not have my legs all, my feet all muddy. He said, you can take that. And he gave me a stinking piece of, I don't know what, bedclothes room and say, a sinking piece of cloth. I said, you can keep it for yourself, and it stinks, you don't want it. I'll have the mother. And then a voice came from the darkness and said, a new one? I said, yes, a new one. Oh dear, where did they get you? I said, at the station. What have you been doing? Stealing something? I said, no, I've been distributing leaflets and putting up posters against the occupation. Oh, she said, that is something good. That is something honorable. You won't get out of it very easily. I'll get out of it. I've been stealing the ration card of somebody for my children. I have 6 children. They'll let me off, but they won't let you off. I said, it doesn't matter if they don't. I'm here for that. I'm here to testify to my idea, our idea. I don't know if it's yours also or not. Anyhow, she said, we were all right under Hitler, that I can tell you. Now these swine came and everything is wrong. We have rationing, we have hardly anything to eat. We have 25 grams of fat every month. I mean to say, you are quite right to fight them. I said, I'm glad to hear it from you, a German. She said, would you like to sleep on my bed? I said, no, the bed is too small, and I'm not sleepy at all. I said, may I sing if you are not going to sleep? May I sing? She said, you can sing as much as you like. I'm not sleepy, I've slept all day. I said, all night. I started singing every one of the National Socialist songs I knew. With all my enthusiasm, I was very happy in this place. And in the morning, as it dawned late, of course, it was in February, I saw 4 feet at the very, very high window, as though 2 people were listening. I said, they listened for a message from underground. I was actually, in the physical sense, underground, as well as in the moral sense. And then they came in, they opened the door. They took out this woman, which was called Hildegard, I don't remember what. And they left me in. And time was passing. I had had nothing to eat all day and all night. And I said, that doesn't matter. When are they going to come? Are they going to leave me here the rest of my life? I was feeling anxious. And at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, or it must have been that much, from what? It was dark outdoors, anyhow. It was dark. They took me in a car, black car, what they call in English, I think, the Black Mariah. And off we went to some place. And the interrogation started. One Mr. Hatch put questions to me, and there were Germans, there was an Oberinspector and some other Germans, the police. And I wanted to speak German because of the Germans were there. He said, no, your trial will be in English. You are will be tried by a military tribunal under the laws of occupation, the statute of occupation, and you are to speak English only. I said, all right. Put questions to me about name, career, my life history and whatnot. And then he said to me, queer, you have a passport?